I've seen people doing some sabotage on the prep in the kitchen.
What do you mean?
I've seen a guy taking a bunch of salt
and
throwing it inside a stock, a sauce.
Just to ruin it?
Just to ruin it.
Welcome to the Hospitality Podcast.
Where's the lamb sauce?
Come on, man.
I just need a...
This is the lamb
sauce. Where's the lamb sauce?
Presented by Arthur Gomez.
God! I just spent $8,000 on some f***ing wine.
And Quentin Wind.
What are you?
An idiot sandwich.
So pour yourself a glass, because we're diving into the world of restaurants, kitchen and bar. The Hospitality Podcast.
Welcome back, guys, to Breaking the Cork.
Welcome.
Today we got a great guest. It's actually a guest that I worked with for... Well, not many years, but we've worked together twice within 12, 15 years, I would say. His name is Guillaume. He's going to be obviously telling us about his journey and what he does today, because it's quite unique what you do today. It's quite personalized. I think it's one of those things where it might open the eyes of other chefs of what they can do in this industry. Before we start, obviously, give us a little rating on
Shopify.
Shopify. On Spotify. It really helps the channel to go further. And again, on Instagram, do not hesitate to put it on the comments. And let's start with Guillaume.
Where are you from, Guillaume?
I'm coming from Nice in France. Moved to London a long time ago.
From the sunshine.
From the sunshine and came to the grey sky. Yeah. 13 years ago, so a long time now.
13 years now. Oh, yeah, of course. Mm-hmm. That's when we...
Yeah. When you moved to London, you were already a chef?
Yeah, I was a chef since 3-4 years, something like that. Mm. Straight after school, I went to work for Alain Ducasse in Monaco.
Okay.
And then moved to London within the group of Alain Ducasse.
How was it to work in Monaco? Because it's quite, obviously, there's a lot of money over
there. Amazing. It's amazing. Well, I don't know how is it in France, because at the end, I never worked in France. So, except the stage in school, you know, but real job, it was my first one, you know.
Was that Alain Ducasse in Monaco?
It was Alain Ducasse in Monaco, cool. So.
What's the craziest thing you've seen in Monaco whilst working there?
Whilst working within the team, I've seen people doing some sabotage on the prep in the kitchen.
Between
chefs.
Wow.
Mm. What do you mean? Can you get more into details? Or?
So I've seen a guy taking a bunch of salt and throwing it inside a stock, a sauce.
Wow, just to ruin it?
Just to ruin it. And
for
just
what purpose?
To take his place.
Yeah, to so get basically the boost.
It was basically because in France you have second commis, first commis, demi chef de partie and chef de partie.
Yeah.
It was every time the guy below
will
sabotage the thing, and if the guy does a mistake, second mistake, he will get sacked or something, and the guy will take his position. Yeah.
A normal thing, a recurring thing, like it's.
I've seen it a few times.
Fuck.
Yeah, I've seen it a few times.
You've been so we're gonna explain after to the listeners, but you've been working in like Michelin restaurant, fine dining, and also more classical restaurant.
Yeah, I did a bit of everything.
Is it like something you see more in fine dining or even like in normal restaurant?
Fine dining.
Fine dining.
Because when you come out of this fine dining team, in good teams, you know, it's gonna be really friendly, and you're gonna work with friends. Much more than in a big fine dining that. At the end of the day, you don't have many friends.
Like you have to fight for your position.
You have to fight for your position. It's really different.
Are you missing the fine dining?
Sometimes yes. Sometimes yes.
The big rush.
The finesse, the excellence. Mm. But in the same time, the day of today, you see it less and less. Mm. And I think it's people are looking less for that as well. I think guest wise.
Yeah.
Oh, you think
definitely.
Okay.
Definitely.
Do you know why? Have you got a guess?
I think. I mean, in my cuisine, I was really up. My dream was to get a Michelin star, and I do think. I was thinking before that to put a lot of element in a plate would make the plate better.
Yeah.
But actually, I don't think it's true, and the guests will see the same, you know. Mm. If you have three elements in one plate, a good sauce, a good garnish, a good a protein, that's it. Mm. You don't need to put plenty of small garnishes, or even if it's sometimes, you know, you will see I don't know, one carrot, one pepper, one cucumber, but at the end, does it make sense? So I think now, less you do, better it is.
Yeah, that's true.
Less you do, better it is.
That's interesting.
Well, the chef was saying that as well, for like the in terms of like money wise, he was saying that the less covers you do, the more money you bring. Because sometimes when you're doing like too much covers, or at least so much cost, because you have more chef, more waste of food, more people don't showing up, etc.
Staff now is expensive.
No, that's crazy.
That's the talk from we had.
That's
the conversation we had in the previous podcast about that.
With Michael?
Actually. Yeah, with Michael. When he was saying, and now like in hospitality, now the salaries are very interesting because, you know, with tips, you receive pretty much
45K.
Yeah, 45K. Yeah. You can quite easily.
Yeah.
Like any other job, it gets paid well. If you put your ass into it, you know, you get that salary now.
But you need to work your ass off. But
like any job, if you want to get a good salary, you know.
No, fair.
But I think as well now, with the staff are looking to work harder, smarter. So people doesn't want anymore to do double shift and everything, you know?
Exactly.
Do you reckon it changed?
It's difficult.
Since 10 years ago?
Yeah.
A lot.
Even me, you know, the hours that I did before, I would never do it now, you know, the time of now. Maybe because I'm older and
I'm
more tired, you know, but I don't know if the time of the time it is now, you know, if I will do it again, you know, I don't know.
And so just to come back on your background, when you arrive in London, so you're starting with Alain Ducasse at the Dorchester?
At the Bulgari Hotel.
At the Bulgari Hotel at the time, okay.
So now it's not anymore. So when the Bulgari Hotel opened, the restaurant was managed by the team of Alain Ducasse.
Okay.
I was part of the opening team. And then I think, the contract, they lost the contract a few years after.
Okay.
But yeah, it was in Bulgari Hotel.
In Bulgari Hotel, okay. Mm-hmm. As a sous chef, chef?
No, I just came after school, you know, 2-3 years after school. Okay. I was as a commis because I didn't speak English at all.
Okay.
So I had to
learn
work.
The language.
Yeah. Was it complicated? Obviously, like not speaking the language. I mean,
it was. Yes and no, because after, you know, I made friend.
Yeah.
It was one French guy. The executive chef was French as well.
Oh yeah, so you can get into the French bubble. In
a way. You get in the French bubble and Italian bubble as well, you know.
Yeah.
Because the name of the restaurant was Italian.
Yeah.
90% of the team was Italian. So even the service was almost all Italian, you know. The chef that was there at the time, the guy was Scottish, but he worked in Italy for Alain Ducasse and France. But he was speaking French, but the French from the kitchen.
And so after Alain Ducasse, why did you decide to go?
I worked in a private restaurant in a member club that I met people from the Robuchon's team to move after with the L'Atelier in London.
L'Atelier Robuchon?
L'Atelier of Joël Robuchon, One star. Amazing as well.
Yeah, good experience. Amazing.
Very good experience. Really difficult in terms of hours.
Like very long hours?
I never worked that much.
Really? Explain.
I never worked. I started at 8, even sometimes before 8 if you are...
8 a.m.?
8 a.m. till 1 a.m. 1:30.
Yeah,
because it was really strict, you know. So even after the service, it was if we were a little bit in a shit with the mise en place, we still had to do some mise en place after the service. Then the cleaning was really sharp, was really, you know. So you don't go home until everything is done.
It's kind of crazy when you start work at a.m. hours and you finish at a.m.
You have a life, huh? At that point,
plenty of days, you know, I didn't see the light.
Wow, that's crazy.
Sometimes we were taking some breaks. Because you just have to breathe, you know? You just have to go out and breathe. We were a good team. They are actually not like in Alain Ducasse, in Monaco, which was good as well, but different, like I said before. So we were friends, you know? And some of the people that I met there, I'm still friends with, you know? So it's... You build a relation because you spend a lot of time with them.
Yeah. A lot.
I mean, at the end of the day, you have to make friends, you know.
So you worked in a private club, you said.
Mm.
How was that? Because obviously, private club is a recurring customers, I guess. It's members that are paying prestige money. What's the outcome of that?
Even if it's not a fine dining, you still have to have the regularity on the food and the you still learn a lot about food, you know, because you still have to be the same every day what you cook, you know. So because the guests will come back and paying a lot of money, a lot of shit of money. So you still have to be a really good chef, you know. You can't, it's not a brasserie, it's not a or even a small bistro that you can change the menu every day or something, you know. Still very organized and even the chef over there, they were really good, you know. It's people with backgrounds. The head chefs and the sous chefs and everything. Cool, so
how often do you change the menu for fine dining? Because for like most of the restaurant, they can change week to week or month to month. But in fine dining, I guess it's like a huge thing when you change the menu.
And I know plenty of restaurants who will change every day.
Really?
I have a Michelin star.
Wow.
Like Lyles. Lyles, I have a menu that they change every day.
Ah, yeah.
One Michelin star in Shoreditch. Yeah. But in the opposite side, you have as well plenty of restaurants who don't change the menu.
Really?
At all. They keep, I like to play with the seasonality, so I think it's the most important. And then, of course, you will have some signature dishes that you want to keep, but you make them with products that are not that seasonal, just to be smart. And then it's as you want. It's the creativity that you have, you know. But for the fine dining, I would say that you can't change that much. Because it's difficult to keep the regularity. To be perfect on every dishes, that's difficult, I think.
Because I guess like in the fine dining, the more you're doing the dishes, the more it looks better, it tastes better, and then you change every day. You never really get this training on the dishes because the first time and the last time.
They just change a vegetable or a meat, but the technique will be the same.
Okay, the preparation.
The preparation will be the same.
Okay.
You have to. You have to. You know, it's just the same. It's to keep this consistency. It's still a Michelin star, you know?
Yeah.
Or even without a Michelin star, a fine dining. So you need the consistency on the dish. So you can't change 100% of the dish every day. You can't. It's impossible.
It's too much. It's too much work.
Too much effort. Too much.
Talking about effort, do you think it's still worth it now? The famous Michelin star.
Still a recognition that you have in your life for a chef.
Okay.
It's still my. It was my dream. Now I think about it, but I think less you think about it, and better it is for yourself, even for the mental. Because if you work yourself really hard, and never anything will happen. It's a big disappointment. Even if you think in your guts that you have the creativity to make it and the passion, you know, sometimes it's not enough. It's not enough. Because that's the problem with Michelin guide, I think.
Yeah.
Types of Michelin star as well, because you can get your own restaurant. Obviously, you open your own restaurant with your own money, and you get the star. Or the second, which is, I think, quite often the case, is you go into a restaurant which isn't yours, and you build your team and you get the staff for the restaurant, but it's not your restaurant.
Yeah.
What's the difference in terms of effort in the two? Is it more financially, or is
I think it's the same. Talking about effort, I think it's the same, because the star will be a recognition for the chef, for the main chef, the main character. Either is the owner or not. So if you put it on the service that you had the star, that is your business or not.
If you're coming into a restaurant which isn't yours, you kind of have to start from scratch with even the team that you're given. And you have to adapt to, you know, the surrounding, the atmosphere, you know, decoration, the whole shebang basically. Whereas if you start with your own money and you start your own restaurant, then obviously you create the atmosphere from scratch. And then you build your team behind as well.
If someone don't really know about like all the criteria of the Michelin star, what do you need to get one?
They say that the first star is about the quality of the food. That's the main of the first star. And then more you go, the second star, they will go more with, they will check a little bit more everything, from the crockery to the toilets, to the way the waiters are dressed,
the service.
Okay. And the third one is the excellence thing.
Well, including a cocktail bar now, apparently.
Cocktail bar is very important. Yeah.
That's why Story had to build a second floor. Because he wants to go for the third star. But in order to get to third star, you need to have a cocktail bar.
So now it's part of the, okay, the criteria for
first star. Yeah, the first star, I say that is like an experience from A to Z. From the time that you book your reservation till you leave, you know. Mm-hmm. It's a whole shebang.
Yeah. Do you think it's worth it paying so much money sometimes?
For the I like it.
Yeah?
I like it because you discover things.
It's an experience. It's like a travel, but like a travel.
You can
like
be as well disappointing sometimes.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah. But that's the only problem.
Yeah, but that's the exciting thing about it.
Yeah,
you're
going to
be spending a lot of money and then you don't know if you're going to like it. But well, there's more chance that you will. But
yeah. I've tried better one star than two and three stars, you know?
Because it's too much.
The whole thing, it's not worth it sometimes, you know?
Actually, speaking of it, of star, which one is your favorite so far that you've done?
L'Enclume.
Okay.
Is in Cartmel, in the north of England.
L'Enclume?
Yeah, okay. L'Enclume. They used to have two stars. I went to do a stage over there. So I tried for the first time the food and everything.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Great experience. Oh. And in London?
Datera.
Datera restaurant, yeah.
Datera in Bethnal Green.
Two stars?
It's two stars. The combination, the fusion of the food is really good.
What is it exactly, the fusion?
The chef is Portuguese or Brazilian, I would not say.
Brazilian.
With a little bit of Italian backgrounds.
Okay. Nice.
It's amazing. And what I like about it is that I discover things.
Yeah.
So when I eat in French, in a Michelin star with French chef or English chef, I will not say that it's always the same because it's not, but the flavors are the same. Mm. When you try a fusion food from another country, it takes me somewhere else, you know. I went to Mexico, they didn't have the Michelin star because the Michelin guide, he wasn't there at the time. But it was number 8 best restaurant in the world. It was amazing. From A to Z, it was amazing.
Is that the one that went on Netflix?
No,
it's not.
It's across the road.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. The one that you're speaking about, I think, is Pujol.
Yeah.
That's our number 5.
Okay.
And Quinton Hill is the other one. They're on the same roundabout.
Well, there's three restaurants from Mexico. They're in the top 10 in the world.
Quinton Hill is still on the top 10, but like number 5 or 6.
He
went
crazy. Up,
and Pujol went a bit down. But
I remember when you came back from Mexico, you were saying how shocked you were with the food, and you absolutely enjoyed it.
Yeah, because every type of food, everything what I ate was amazing and different again.
Yeah.
So it's not the same flavor that you're gonna eat in UK or in France. It's not.
What would you say is your favorite food? Like if you had to eat something every day for the rest of your life.
Nationality. Countries.
Well, countries. I don't know, it can be like French, Portuguese, Japanese.
I like a dish of every country's.
Okay.
So I don't have really a favorite, you know, but take away Singaporean noodles, I love it. I will eat it every day.
Ah, yeah.
But in the same time, a cut de bœuf with béarnaise and fries, I will eat it every day as well, you know? It's different. I don't have really a favorite dish, but in Italy, I will eat every day as well carbonara with pasta, you know?
Yeah.
Every day I will eat it.
Oh. Italy, it's incredible. They don't use much ingredients.
Yeah.
And they don't do much cooking, actually. It's just like, you know, blending stuff together. Mm. It's good quality ingredients and made it simple.
Exactly. That's really important, what you said, because it's produces that grow up or you kill the animal just before. And because it's always in your neighborhood, cheese with a burrata.
Yeah.
Cheese the burrata that I eat in Napoli, in Naples, they're not the same that you eat here.
Yeah.
And it's totally different. Yeah, it's so much better. So much better.
Everything, the cheese, the pasta, even when you make the pasta yourself.
It's not the same. It's not the same.
They're completely different.
Everything is good, you know.
So set aside all of this, now I'd like to approach a subject that I found quite interesting with you is you love cameras and you've been filmed a few times. You've done, what do you call them, in festivals where you showcase shows in front of, obviously...
Cooking
cooking shows.
Cooking shows
in front of quite a few people as well. You seem very comfortable in front of the camera. Is that something you've always had, or is it something you'd like to exploit on the long term?
I never had that before. But when I worked in my previous job as an executive head chef in Bokan, the kitchen was open. And I don't know. It made me realize that don't be scared to speak with the guests first, you know?
Mm.
Because the kitchen was open. So again, you can't be a bastard chef. Otherwise, you can't do it, you know?
Yeah.
You can't raise a voice. But in the same time, yeah, you just have to... Because I was really shy before.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I was really shy. And I think I still am. But when I speak about my passion to guests, I just open.
Just open up.
Yeah. I just open up and then it becomes normal, you know? You share your passion. So it's more than just a job. When you're a chef, it can't be just a job. Mm. It can't be. When I see sometimes where I worked that they come here just to take the money, you can't.
If you don't have the passion, you can't stay like...
Otherwise, it's really difficult. Now, the salaries are much better. But before, when the salary was really bad, if you take a shit salary, that you are doing a lot of hours, man, if you don't have the passion...
Yeah.
It's difficult, hein? Yeah. Trust me. Hein? Yeah. Trust me. Hein?
Is it more difficult to work in a kitchen when you know you got the guests like a few meters from you and it's open? That you have to be careful about what you say. Even like if you're angry, you can really shout at your team.
I'm sometimes a bit silly, you know. So to be honest, it's not. Because people will see that you're yourself.
Mm.
You have to work clean. You have to make sure that your teams work clean. You can't shout and everything. But in the same time, you have to be yourself. And I think that's what the guests love as well. You forget that you have guests around.
Yeah. Mm.
And this actually, I learned it in a Robuchon kitchen. Because l'atelier, it's completely open.
Yeah.
So as a chef, we just work behind the counter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a young chef, trust me that your station is dirty.
Mm.
It is, you know. But then when you work with the right people, then they teach you that you have to be better.
Mm.
Then you be better, you know. You're better every day, you know.
Yeah.
So that's one. Yeah, that's where I learn as well how to be. Organize.
Yeah.
Organize. Nice. I think it's a word.
Yeah.
Organize. Otherwise, if the guests that see that, I don't know, it's silly, hein, but me in the kitchen, I will put the spoon in my mouth and put it again, but at home, you know?
Yeah.
But you can't do that on the front of the customer.
Ah, bah,
you can't. It's impossible.
The customer is also paying for the experience.
Yeah.
So it can also make sense.
It's not free. And they come to enjoy your food. Like I'll always say, it's not just about the food, it's the experience. It's not just the food, or not just the service, or not just the view. Because in Bokan, it was about the view. It's great. But it's not just this, you know?
Mm.
And when we opened the hotel, people was coming for the view, you know? Mm. I was really annoyed about that, you know? I was even speaking to the GM to put some signage to hide the view, you know?
Yeah.
Because it's impossible. People were standing just behind me, so they were not directly through the window, and they were complaining, oh, I want to move close the window. Man.
Yeah, but just enjoy, the chef, you know? Enjoy the kitchen.
No, but even you see the view from all the restaurant. You know, it's not a small window. In Bokan,
it's a 360, right?
Yeah, it's 360. You see everything from everywhere, you know?
Mm. Don't you feel like the Shard, that's a bit of a problem they've had? So when they first opened, they were very strict on who could go in and, you know, the food.
You can't move your seat as well, I think. You can't move your seat.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
I think they realized that people were not going for the food, but more for the view. So they've opened it up to the main public, in a way.
Now that's busy.
It's a brasserie, and then it's busy. And then, but the food, I don't know if it's going to be great, you know, as well. That's the thing. I don't know.
I've never been
to the Shard. Been for cocktails is great. Not cheap though.
Mm.
You gotta pay the price, but it's good cocktails, so it's fine. But for the food, I've never been. But obviously, the view is crazy.
It's great, yes and no, I think, because you don't see the Shard. In Canary Wharf, we could see all London.
Yeah.
All London. So yes, it's in Canary Wharf, but what I liked about this is that the view is different every day because of the sky, because of everything, the sunset and everything.
It's a bit like a random question, but like, does it make any difference to cook from a ground floor restaurant and from like a 100 floors restaurant?
It's a big difference. I don't know if it's a not, but for me to cook, it's a big difference.
Oh yeah?
Really?
Oh yeah, it's a big difference. Because when you work in a basement or somewhere that is closed, you don't see the, you just work. So your mental will be just on working mode, you know?
Mm.
But when you have a view, I don't know, it's different. It gives you a smile on the face, you know, because you don't see just your chopping board, I think.
I had the same experience in Australia. I used to work as a bartender on a sort of restaurant that was on top of the water with crocodiles, you know? Mm. It was like the end of a river that was going into the sea. And we had the sunset right in front. And the bar where I was working, the sunset with everyone sitting down in front. But you like you said, the view. And everyone's happy because they have the view.
Anyway, you're working with a smile naturally.
When you're going in this kitchen in the basement and the light are so strong, so aggressive. It makes sense because you're preparing food. So you need to see it clear. But it's just so aggressive. If you spend like 10 hours a day, every day.
Yeah.
It's like you're going outside and you're like, blind almost. It's
definitely. Yeah. After, sometimes it's nice to have a back kitchen and then the front kitchen with the service kitchen. Yeah.
Mm.
So at least it gives you a bit of break, from the basement. That's good.
Do you want to explain a bit what was the role of executive chef in a restaurant?
To do everything. No. It's just to manage the people that you have under you.
Mm.
Like a head chef and a sous chef, to make sure that all the outlets are working well every day. That's the main one, I think. And then of course, after, if you're passionate, well, you put your heads into it and your hands.
Yeah. Are you still cooking when you executive head chef, or is only the head chef who's cooking?
Less and less, because you have so much admin to do. And me, I was trying to come early when the team wasn't there. And to do my admin on the morning, and then when they were coming with them. But even that, sometimes I said, But yes, I never liked the computer job, the admin job. So for me, I was trying the maximum to be in the kitchen. If you want a happy chef, you will see him in the kitchen with his knife and with his team.
You got the passion.
You got the passion to it, you just want to cook, you just want to try, you just want to do what a chef does, the big fans.
And so after this experience, you decided to go for another job?
To do something completely different. Yeah. I wanted to have a break of restaurant, hotels. Mm-hmm. So I opened with a business partner, food truck. So really different. I was thinking I would like it because you have the contact with the guests and everything. But it's a different job. It's a different game. It's a different job. It's different. I will not say I don't like it, but I wasn't in my shoes. I prefer to be in a kitchen close.
In a restaurant. Kitchen.
Mm, in a restaurant.
Yeah.
A moving kitchen is difficult. Can be cold, can be small, a lot of issues.
What in terms of issues do you have?
With a food truck, just every day was a new thing, Kitchen inside, the problem at the market where we were trading, everything.
Especially winter time.
Winter time.
And you did that for like what, a year, 2 years?
A year and a half? Okay. Almost 2 years. Almost 2 years, yeah. The best part on that was the festivals.
Mm.
That was amazing. Amazing.
During summer, it's nice.
You make money, you're happy, you meet people, you have to make it fast, so it's like a service in a restaurant, but even
faster than
that, for longer hours. You need less than 1 minute to get your dish,
Yeah.
Sometimes it's tricky, it's difficult, but you just have to make it happen. And lucky as a chef, I have the background that I can adapt the menu to make it fast.
Yeah.
When I think plenty of street food, they don't have the background as a chef, and I think it's more difficult, even if the food is great.
Yeah.
But it's nice to have a background of chef when you do that. It's a plus.
Yeah.
Mm. It's a plus. But it's a plus.
Did you make your food a bit more like fine dining style?
Yeah.
In your,
that was maybe my mistake.
Really? Why?
We realized that people in the street doesn't want a gourmet dish, plate or dish, So they're really happy with a dirty pizza, with a dirty burger.
Street food.
Yeah. I wanted to take the street food to a little bit more of fine dining cooking.
So after that, you did... That's why I wanted to come. I was saying at the beginning of the podcast where I was saying you do something quite personalized, more than personal, as a chef. And you do pop-ups.
Yes.
So you intervene in restaurants. Mm. You've traveled to Canada as well recently.
It should be coming soon. Not yet, but it should be coming.
You're getting invited by restaurants to cook in the kitchen, which is quite a new way for a restaurant to propose a new menu. I mean,
yes, yes. So, and I really like it because the restaurant now struggle with bookings. But not because they don't have any bookings, because there is a lot of no-shows.
Yeah.
So much.
So much. And this I think now is a big, big issue, you know? And sometimes you have a big, big restaurant that you have to fill, but you never fill it, you know? Mm. It's really difficult to work as a restaurant. And what is good with that is that, so now what I'm doing exactly is that I'm moving every week to a different location in London with the same menu. But at least every week I will have different guests from the neighborhood. And people are excited about it because they're going to eat something that they never eat before. Maybe if they know, you know, because if they are from the country of the fusion or something, but it's different because as well it's inside coffee shops most of the times that they are closed on the evening usually.
Oh yeah, okay.
So that's where we take the coffee shop that's open on the day, and when they close, our team comes in to make it as a restaurant.
Nice.
And then
cool.
You cook inside. It's nice. It's really nice, and I know for how many people I will cook as well.
Yeah.
I know the dietary is in advance, so there is no wastage.
Yeah. I really loved it when I went to your
wastage.
It was absolutely amazing. The one in the garden. No, it's not Spitalfields Garden.
In the farm, in Brick Lane Farm.
Yeah, the Brick Lane Farm.
Yeah.
It was glorious.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the whole atmosphere, again, it's the experience, like you said.
Yeah, yeah. It's the experience. You're in the middle of the farm.
The whole thing was just, wow. Like, it's unique. I don't know whether, you never know if you're going to be able to do it again, because obviously it all depends on you.
Yeah.
So that's why I found it amazing. And coming back to what you're saying, it's all about the experience. You know?
It's about the experience.
Yeah.
Truly believe, you know, it's something very, it's different.
Yeah,
it's different.
Yeah,
I did one with the C just before they closed their chef table with a menu 100% with fish inside, you know.
What was the dessert?
It was rice pudding with fish caramel.
Oh,
wow. It was the fish element was a fish caramel.
How does it taste?
Fishy but in same time it wasn't that fishy because with the sugar was taking down the fish taste,
yeah,
it was going so well.
It
was going really well. Yeah.
Incredible.
I like the menu, like when people are doing like a full fish menu, and you need to imagine like, are you gonna put the fish in a dessert or like, you know,
very culotté, obviously.
Yeah, or like
very culotté. Yes.
full caviar. Well, obviously it's a bit more fancy. Hein,
like full caviar. Well, with caviar, I did as well. You know, it's so cool because even as a chef, it's very exciting. Because you create new things, you know,
at the end of the day.
It's just a creation for yourself as well. Mm. And for example, the favorite that dessert that I create of all time is with caviar.
Really?
Yeah, it's amazing. I did a brioche with inside a peach, caramel, and olive oil ice cream with caviar.
Oh
man,
it
was so good.
That sounds
the caramel cool. was made with elderflower that I forage.
I remember that you're a huge fan. Well, your second passion is having a garden.
Yes, having a garden and forage. That's on the top of everything. Yes, it's another passion, my crazy passion. But it's nice because you know where is from the product that you use, you know. So it's always a plus, and at the end of the day, it costs less money as well, you know.
Yeah.
Cheaper, I have a spot in London that I pick the wild garlic. That's only few people knows, and not because I want to keep it for myself. And just actually, it's a lot, so I could share it. But it's a lot of wild garlic, you know.
Yeah.
During the COVID, I picked up 27 kilo, and I just did some prep for myself, you know.
What are you doing with 27 kilo?
Everything, I did from. Oil, gnocchi with wild garlic, pesto with wild garlic, powder, I mean, fermented wild garlic as well, vinegar. I mean, it's endless, you know?
Yeah.
Shampoo.
Shampoo.
Ouais, you can, hein. It's gonna be a bit smelly, but. It's gonna be a bit smelly, but.
Toothpaste.
Capers with the flour.
Ah, yeah. Ah,
ouais. I was making the capers of wild garlic. And it's things that you can keep as well, you know, after, you know. Mm. You store it and you put inside the vinegar and oil.
Yeah. It's a really cool concept, isn't it? So to be able to change, yeah. But is I guess it's a lot of job.
It's
because at the same time you can say it's quite similar to your to the experience that you had with the van, because obviously you move, you know, from place to place.
Mm.
The only difference is you might be a bit more inside and in a proper spacious kitchen.
Yes, it's not always the best kitchen, and it's always a surprise when you come in for the first time.
Yeah,
but then you adapt. You know,
Now
I'm used to it, so it was harder at the beginning, but now that I'm doing this since almost a year, I take all the equipment that I need to adapt on any situation, because you never know if the oven there will work. You never know if they have a fryer. You take everything, all the pans, the pots, all the food, chopping boards, everything. You move a restaurant at the end of the day. It's a different concept, but I do think for the guest, it's good. It's really nice because we go to them, you know.
Yeah.
It's not at home, but it's in your neighbor.
And it's cool. This concept of like, especially like some restaurant like Early June in Paris, where they're very famous for that. Every month, new chef, new cuisine, new food.
Exactly.
And when's your next one?
This week, weekend. Yeah. It's now. I'm planning until end of February.
Okay.
With a Franco-Mexican menu. Yeah.
Nice.
So I try to make the menu with the knowledge that I have and with the travels that I did, but not to confuse too much. So this one is Franco-Mexican. I did before Franco-Japanese, just with the next one Franco-Vietnamese.
Nice. Yeah, why not?
Got so much option.
History as well.
In France we have the technique, and of course we have the food and the produce, but it's nice to take other produce from the other country that you tried that are different and to make something new, you know.
So is that one-off, the Franco-Mexican? Or?
No, Franco-Mexican is the same menu until end of February a different location.
Okay, cool.
Every
Which
time,
location
different.
Is this week?
This week I'm is the Leech.
Okay.
Close to you.
Actually. Yeah.
Is the Leech. Next week I'm in Beaconsfield, a little bit outside of London. What do I have? Watamso, North London, Cobham, out of London, Ascot, Marlow, coming up next. So even further from London, you know.
Oh, wow.
It will never be inside London. I did only one in Shoreditch. That's it. That's the closest.
Okay.
Otherwise, it would be Highgate, Archway, Richmond, Crystal Palace.
That's really good. Because at the same time, you get to travel a bit in the
countryside. Which this sometimes is a bit tricky, you know, because you have to go and takes time.
Mm. And it's 5 days a week?
Most of the time it's Thursday, Friday and Saturday.
Okay, that's nice.
And then I do my prep alone or with a friend of mine who come to help me or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that's good as well. With the issues that there is now in London with staff, I don't have that one. I don't have that issue.
And how can the listeners find out where you are next? Is it
just to
Instagram?
Follow me on Instagram or the account?
It's
Table and Candle. It's a company that's doing this.
Okay.
We are two or three chefs to do it. Table and Candle, and we do this every week. For the moment, I'm doing that.
Okay.
And sometimes a pop-up around.
Yeah.
Like I did beginning of September in Chazelle, bistro in Brick Lane. And now I'm doing their menu.
But Chazelle, you creating the menu on a weekly basis?
Yeah, weekly basis, and to change slowly the menu, but to stay with the Chazelle atmosphere and food, you know, because that is still a restaurant that is open since, I don't know, 14, 15
Many
years.
Times.
So they have to keep the snails, they have to keep the frog legs, you know.
It's still a French
restaurant. It's still a French restaurant. The onion soup will never move. It's still to bring my touch to the restaurant by doing some classic French food.
Yeah, cool.
No fine dining there, you know, but just good quality food and trying to make my best there as well, you know.
Straight from the garden.
Yeah.
Is it probably one of your dream or your goal to have your own restaurant? And my second question was like, would be a restaurant with a garden?
That's the idea.
Yeah?
If not a garden, with a farm that I'm working closely with.
Mm.
Like I said, in Lanclum, my favorite restaurant, they have a farm that is dedicated just for them.
Wow.
That's so cool, man. You go in the morning, I mean, you receive from the morning the vegetable and fruits from there, you know. It can be more fresh than that.
Yeah.
And the flavor change is not the same that you're going to buy in Sainsbury or in Tesco. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I'm not going to say that is crap, you know, but it's not the same.
No, it is crap.
It's not the same. Oh, I can't say that, but it's not the same flavor at all.
Have you been to one of the best restaurants in the world in Copenhagen called Noma?
I would like to go. Yeah.
Because Noma, they're doing everything from the street to the garden.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy.
Apparently, it's crazy. I've never been.
Is that the one in the middle of the lake?
I never did.
No, this is in Norway.
This one looks cool as well.
Yeah,
it looks cool. They got a Michelin star, but it's a good concept, you know, as well.
Yeah.
You're in the middle of the sea, of a lake. But you're under the sea. It's so cool.
Yeah. The concept is so crazy, so cool. But it's fucking cool.
Even in Dubai, I eat in Oceano, which you are inside an aquarium.
Oh, that's the one. Yeah,
yeah,
okay.
It's amazing. You have an amazing experience. And so again, it's not the view that you have outside, but it's the view from the place where you sit, you know.
Mm.
You're surrounded by water.
Yeah, yeah.
And fish inside. It's crazy. It's huge, huh? It's huge, so it's not even a small aquarium. Huh?
That's the craziness of Dubai.
Yeah, it's a craziness of Dubai, but it's really good.
We always ask a last question before we finish the podcast. It is, what advice would you give to anyone who wants to start to be a chef, and especially at a young age?
First of all, you have to like cooking at home, and then you have to work with passion. That's the only thing that you have to think of, you know. It's super important, I think.
How long does it take you to know that it's your passion? Because you can cook for 1-2 years.
Yeah, I got it straight away. I can't answer to that, but I guess as soon as you like something, you will feel it, you know. You will feel it in your guts. If you go to try a cooking school, that you have plenty of things, that you can be a waiter, everything in the hospitality, as soon as you try something, you will know.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
You will know that you want to do that, you know. For sure, if you are in a kitchen, you have to have the passion for it. That's it.
Otherwise you're dead.
Otherwise you're dead.
Do you need patience as well? Like to be patient in your job? Because it takes time to get at the top.
Yeah. A lot. For everything. It takes half of your life, you know? Especially if you want to do a bit of, to try a little bit of different cuisine type of restaurant, you will work less, of course, in a simple restaurant, but it's nice to do it because you see the organization how it is, you know?
Of course.
But it's amazing. I will always say to a young chef to go in a fine dining. It's maybe the most difficult, you know, in terms of hours, in terms of that you don't get paid a lot, even if now it's much better. You learn how to be organized, you learn how to be a good chef, you know.
There you go, guys.
Thank you so much.
Very nice to have you on the podcast.
Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thanks for coming.
Thank you for me.
And again, guys, if you want to try his cuisine, go on his Instagram, follow him on chef _goose. G-U-S.
Yeah.
So go follow him. He announces where he goes, which parts of London. You should definitely try his cuisine. It's bloody amazing.
And tables and candles.
Tables and candles.
Thank you very much, Guillaume.
Thank you,
guys.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
See you, guys. Bye-bye.
See you. Bye-bye. The Hospitality Podcast.